Talk Shoe. Recorded live.
This call is being recorded.
Welcome to the Old Time Dragnet Show. This is your host, Adam Graham. On this show, for those, and we do have someone, well, I've not seen before listening to the show, Pierre from France. It's good to have you here and have you listening. We go through shows from the original Dragnet era. These shows placed onto the radio back in the 1940s and 50s. We're in the first few episodes, so this is the 1940s show. This show is actually one of the very first ones. This is episode 28. This was originally aired on December 8th, 1949. Now, this show, these shows, by the way, just for clarification, have basically all gone into the public domain for all intents and purposes. Nobody's, you know, pursuing copyright. So these are basically lapsed into the public domain just because they weren't copyrighted in the first place when they were first done as radio shows. So we've got this huge opportunity with our radio heritage to kind of enjoy some of this. And this was groundbreaking, and they're still working out a lot of things. The show was becoming the type of Dragnet that we watched on TV in the 50s and later on in the 70s. This show actually officially announces the departure of Raymond Burr as Ed Backstrand, the chief of detectives. Two episodes ago, actually, was the last episode that actually featured Raymond Burr, who went on later to play Perry Mason. This show actually officially announces it. Last time, it still had, the boss was Ed Backstrand, the chief of detectives, but Ed Backstrand wasn't in the episode, and in fact, they were dealing, the guys were dealing with a generic captain. Here we get, as the show opens, we see a farewell party for Ed Backstrand, and this will mark the beginning of a new era in Dragnet. We'll kind of discuss that afterwards. And, of course, as always, we do edit out the ads, but there'll be one ad showing up in the middle for one of our other shows, the Light at the Edge of Darkness podcast. But let me go ahead, and we will get started with no further ado into this episode, which is called The Jade Thumb Rings.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Fatima Cigarettes, best of bong cigarettes, brings you Dragnet.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned to robbery detail. $8,000 worth of Chinese jade has been stolen. The criminal is vicious. His weapon, a handful of buckshot in a handkerchief. Your job, get him.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Monday, December 1st. It was foggy in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of robbery detail. My partner's Ben Romero. The boss is Ed Backstrand, chief of detectives. My name's Friday. It was 7:15 p.m. when we got to the police academy, the banquet room.
Where do we sit, Joe?
Well, Lee Jones is holding a couple seats for us someplace. You see him?
Oh, yeah, yeah. There he is at Burn.
Well, look at him. Everybody's here.
Yeah, ought to be.
Hi, fellas. Couple of ringside seats.
Thanks, Lee.
Did you get it?
Yeah. Right here.
Mind if I take a look at it?
No, go ahead.
How come it didn't get wrapped as a gift?
No time.
Gift box would have been nice. No cotton even? Beautiful watch. Radium dial?
Yeah.
Universal Geneva, a fine movement. He'll like it.
Look on the back.
Let's see. Chief Ed Backstrand, a good cop, detective bureau. Not very good engraving.
No time. I didn't think the old man really meant it.
26 years. You get tired after 26 years.
You've been at it 25, Lee.
Oh, don't look at me like that. I got a book to finish. 23 chapters.
How many chapters you got finished?
2.
How long you been writing it?
2 years.
Well, at that rate, we'll be stuck with you for another 21 years.
If you're lucky. Excuse me, fellas. Gotta make a speech.
All right, Lee.
Get the proceedings underway here before we introduce the man of the hour. I'd like to pass along a little story you might get a kick out of. I was driving down from Utah last year, stopped off at a hotel in Elko, Nevada. When I went up to register for my room, there was an Indian ahead of me. The clerk asked this Indian fella to sign his name, and the clerk handed him a pen. The Indian made a mess on the book. The clerk looked at him for a minute and said, "Say, aren't you Chief Deerskin? Haven't I seen you in the movies?" The Indian nodded his head and looked a little upset.
"Oh," he said. "Oh, he make a lot of movies in Hollywood."
The clerk smiled and said, "A lot of people in Elko here like to get your autograph, Chief." Then the Indian grabbed the pen up again and he said,
"Me no like a autograph hunter. Me no want to be bothered."
Then he drew a circle around the X he made. The clerk said, "Why you do that, Chief?" The Indian said,
"Me no use him right name."
Oh, hey, Joe. Yeah, there's Rogers for his motion to air. Oh, yeah, excuse me about that.
Chief was retiring tonight. But he's been using his right name for 26 years, and he's proud of it. And we're proud to have been associated.
You want me, Rogers? A phone for you, Joe. And take it on the extension outside.
After 26 years of service, he's retiring from the Los Angeles Police Department. We're going to miss him. Gentlemen, a fine officer, Chief Ed Backstrand.
Where's the phone?
What are we here?
Thanks. Friday.
Joe, this is Gonzalez.
Yeah, Jeff.
Sorry to bother you, but Power said I should call you.
Yeah?
I need some leg work.
Something big?
Pretty big, yeah. Too many loose ends. Penny and I can't pull them all in.
When do you want us?
As soon as you can get down here.
That important, huh?
A man may die, Joe.
Hi, Jess. Got here as soon as we could.
Sorry to pull you away. Hello, Romero.
Gonzalez, what's up?
Come on in here.
All right.
Here's a report. Not complete yet. Mm-hmm. Chinese fella. Name's George Kwan. He's a jeweler, gem cutter.
Yeah.
Jade expert. Knows as much about jade as anybody on the coast.
Uh-huh. Says it happened at 5:30 today on Alvarado near the park.
Hmm. They weren't kidding, were they? They almost killed him.
Yeah. Any idea what the weapon was, Jess?
I'm not sure. Looked like some sort of blackjack, something homemade.
Yeah?
When they picked up Kwan, they found several buckshot pellets lying around and a man's handkerchief. Ray Pinker has the stuff over in the crime lab now.
Where's Kwan? Have you talked to him?
Got in a couple of questions down at Georgia Street while the doc was giving him sedatives. Little guy's a mess, Joe.
It's gonna be all right.
50-50 chance when I called you out of the academy.
Well, why did they beat him? Did he resist?
I don't have it all yet, but from what he said, he was jumped from behind, didn't have a chance to fight. Whoever it was kept beating him long after he was unconscious.
What'd they take him for?
A couple of pieces of jade. Large ones. Very rare.
Mm-hmm. You got anything else?
Yeah, we got a star witness, just one.
Did you talk to him yet?
Just did, for an hour and a half. You want a crack at it?
You having trouble with him?
Yeah, a little. All right, Pena. Send him in again.
Yes, sir. You want to talk some more?
6 years old, Joe.
His name was Norman Eugene Fisher, and he was 6 years of age last April. Like all young boys his age, his imagination ran away with him. What would be only a minor detail to an adult witness assumed tremendous proportions in Norman's young mind. He told us his story 3 times. Each time he elaborated a little more until what he claimed was the truth could only have been figments of a small child's imagination. Ben and I, together with Gonzalez and Pena, talked with the boy for another hour. We were getting tired, but Norman enjoyed his position as star witness.
Once more, Norman, please, try to remember it as it really happened.
But just like I said.
Let me try, Jess. Go ahead, Romero.
You did see it happen this afternoon, didn't you, Norman?
Yes, sir, I did.
Good. Now, you were on your way home from the store.
Oh, no, sir. I was running away from a man. He was chasing me.
But you just told us, Norman, that you were on your way home from the store.
Oh, no, sir. That was yesterday.
But you told us.
Just a minute, Ben. Norman, how old are you?
Next year, I'm going to be 21.
No, that's not right. 21, that's older than I am.
Well, when I am 21, I'm going to get a hot rod. Fastest car in the world. 10,000 miles an hour.
Sure you will. But how old are you now?
Six, but I'm going to be 21 soon.
I remember when I was 6 years old, Norman. A lot of things I wanted. Electric train.
I got one.
Well, it must be something you'd like to have. One thing that maybe now that you don't have, huh?
Will you give it to me?
Well, if I can. What do you want?
I'd like your gun.
Well, what do you want a gun for?
I want to put people in jail like you guys do.
Sometimes it takes more than a gun, Norman.
What do you mean?
Just because you've got a gun doesn't mean you're a cop.
Well, what does?
Just a minute, son. Here you go, Norman. A good cop uses this more than a gun.
Gee.
It's a real police badge. It's mine.
Official?
Official.
Can I hold it?
Go ahead. It's yours.
When I wear this, I'm a real detective.
Well, that's part of it. The other part is to tell us what you really saw today. Now, how about it, huh?
There were four men, like I said, and they all had machines.
Now, wait a minute, Norman. I thought you said you were a detective now.
I am.
A good detective has to remember exactly what he sees, not something he makes up.
It's not very scary that way.
No, it's no use, Joe. He can't get his story straight.
Oh, yes, I can. I'm a detective now, and I know what happened.
All right, Norman, you tell us, huh?
I was on my way home from the store. I saw this truck stop down the street.
What truck looked like?
I don't know. It was a funny kind of truck. Had a wood back.
You mean like a dump truck?
Kind of, but it was a small truck. Old kind of car, like he took out the back part and put wood boards like a truck.
You mean whoever owned the truck cut the back end out and made it look like a truck, huh?
Yeah, that's the way it looked. Anyway, this truck stopped by this Chinese man, and the man got out, and the man started to hit this man. And the man fell on the sidewalk, and the man kept hitting him and hitting him as hard as anything.
Well, what was he hitting him with?
With his handkerchief.
There he goes again.
Oh, I don't know. How about that, Jess?
Good tie-in.
Go on, Norman.
Well, that's all I saw.
No, I mean after the man hit him, what did he do?
Oh, well, he grabbed a bunch of stuff from this man's pocket, and he went into the truck, and he speeded away.
Norman, you're a good detective. I want you to think real hard now. Do you know what a license number is?
Yeah.
Good. Do you think you could remember the numbers on that truck?
If I knew what they were, I could. In school, we're just having numbers now. I only know up to seven, but there were 2 sevens in it.
You're getting all this, Jess?
Yeah, keep them.
Norman, you've helped us a lot. Can you remember what the man on the truck looked like?
He had a big head and he looked mean.
All right, just one more thing now. Can you remember the color of that truck?
It looked black, but the back part had black and white stripes.
I don't know how you did it, Joe.
Well, what do you think?
How about it?
Me too.
All right, Norman. Your mother's waiting outside for you. You can go home now. You're a real detective.
Can I wear my badge now?
You bet you can.
Okay. Say.
Yes, sir?
As soon as I arrest somebody, will you put him in jail?
With the help of an outdated police badge, no longer official, we had the statement of a 6-year-old boy with a healthy imagination. We had an idea he was telling us the truth, but we had no way of being certain. Since he was the only witness, we had to accept his word and hope that he was putting us on the right track. The quickest way to make sure was to see if some of the details in little Norman Fisher's story would check out. Jess Gonzalez and Manuel Pena took the job of trying to locate a homemade pickup truck with 2 sevens in the license number. They started by checking all the late 3.8 forms, vehicle theft and impound reports. The next morning, Ben and I called the General Hospital and talked with Dr. Sebastian. He told us that the victim, George Kwan, had improved sufficiently to allow a brief interview. It was 10:14 a.m. when we got to Ward C, General Hospital.
Doctor tells you a little better this morning, Mr. Kwan.
Yes, sir. I shall be all right, although it is quite painful at times.
We're sorry to bother you, Mr. Kwan, but we've got to have a little more information on the robbery.
Oh, I will tell you all I can, sir. I should like to recover the missing jade pieces. It is a great loss to me.
Did you get any kind of a look at the man who hit you?
Oh, he attacked me from behind, knocked me to the pavement. I made an attempt to get to my feet, but he struck me again and again, here at the base base of my neck.
You didn't see him at all, then?
No, sir, I did not.
Do you have any idea who could have done this?
Unfortunately, no. I cannot think of anyone.
What was stolen from you? We know it was jade, but can you give us a more detailed description?
Well, sir, I lost two thumb rings. Very rare. Collector's items.
Thumb rings, huh? How much were they worth, would you say?
Well, I paid $8,000 for the two rings.
I wonder if you could describe them to us.
Well, both rings were relics of the time when the Chinese archer drew his hunting bow with a special thumb ring.
Uh-huh. Any particular identifying marks on them?
They both have linings of fine gold to fit them to the fingers of the new owners.
Who were the new owners?
I had just purchased them yesterday before I was robbed. I was on my way to San Francisco to show them to prospective buyers.
Who did you buy the rings from, Mr. Quine?
Mrs. Inez Curtis, a very reputable dealer. We have done business for many years.
I wonder if we could have her business address, huh?
She has her office at her home. It is 1957 Harper Annex, off Sunset Boulevard in Beverly Hills.
How many people knew that you had the jade on you at that particular time yesterday?
Oh, let me see. There were only two other buyers present beside Mrs. Curtis. I do not recall their names. They were new to me. Mrs. Curtis would know.
Mr. Quine, we know that you're tired. We have just one more question.
Certainly. I wonder if I might trouble you to hand me that tumbler of water with a glass straw.
Surely. Here you are.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Now, those thumb rings, Mr. Quine, would there be any practical disposition of them other than selling them as they are?
Well, hardly, Sergeant. To anyone who really knows the value of jade, it would be unheard of to change them in any way.
I see. Well, thank you, Mr. Quine. We'll do our best.
You know, Sergeant, we Chinese place a great sentimental value on our jade.
We'll do everything we can to recover it.
Thank you. May I tell you my favorite quotation on jade?
Yes, sir.
It is from the writings of Tong Jung To. He wrote, "The magic powers of heaven and earth always combine to form perfect result. So the pure essences of healing water become solidified in precious jade."
Ben and I drove out to 1957 Harper Annex, the residence of Mrs. Inez Curtis. There was no one at home. We left one of our cars. It was 12:22 p.m. when we got back to Central Division.
Here's a phone message for you, Joe.
What's it say?
Call Jess Gonzalez. He's at the Wilshire Division.
Okay, thanks, Ben.
Wilshire Detectives, Dillion.
Hi, Harry. Gonzalez around?
Just a minute. Tape on three, dude.
Gonzalez.
Friday, Jess.
We got the truck and we got the driver.
We'll be right out.
Something else, Joe?
Yeah?
The kid was right. There were two sevens in the license number.
You are listening to Dragnet for the solution to an actual case from official police files.
Journey to the edge with the Light at the Edge of Darkness podcast, this week featuring Adino. A Peace Force warrior stands accused of cold-blooded murder of a rogue warrior, all caught on tape. The film clip that could prove him innocent is missing, and assassins stalk him even inside prison walls. What will happen? Find out this weekend, Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern on TalkShoe.com. Talkcast ID 29873. That's Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern on TalkShoe.com.
Wilbur Rasmussen, white, male American, age 31, 5 feet 10 inches, 190 pounds, black hair, brown eyes. He was the driver of the truck. Gonzalez and Pena began by checking through all of the reports of trucks impounded during the past 24 hours. There were 23. Out of those 23, they narrowed it down to four possibilities. The third vehicle that they checked fitted the young witness's description of the holdup truck. We still could not be absolutely certain that the impounded truck was the one we were looking for. The same could be said of the driver, Will.
Wilbur Rasmussen. The net result of checking impound reports doesn't always result in the apprehension of a suspect, but in this case, we were lucky. The driver had been picked up for drunk driving. It was 1:30 p.m. when we checked in at the Wilshire Division.
Hi, Jess. Where is he?
You're a little late.
What do you mean?
He's gone, released on bail.
Who furnished the bail?
The woman he works for, Mrs. Inez Curtis.
Well, that doesn't figure, Jess, or does it?
Why not? How many people knew Quan had the jade?
No, that's not my guess. Quan vouches for her. He's been doing business with her for years.
What do you think, Joe?
It's your show. I'm just tagging along.
Well, one thing's sure. Just a minute. Wilshire Detectives, Gonzalez. Yeah, Pena. He did? No, meet me back here. Hmm? Friday and Romero are here. Right. The Fisher kid just identified Rasmussen's picture.
The identification of Wilbur Rasmussen by 6-year-old Norman Fisher was far from sufficient to take the case to court. We had to have evidence, lots of it. Rasmussen had been given a thorough shakedown, his apartment and the truck. There was no sign of the stolen jade rings. Gonzalez told us that the truck had come from the U-Drive truck rental on Figueroa Street. We checked with Mr. Crockett at U-Drive.
Let me have another look at that picture, boys.
Yeah, here you are.
What'd you say his name was?
Rasmussen. Wilbur Rasmussen.
You want to know if he rented a truck from Miss Wynn?
Yesterday. Maybe the day before.
No, not this fella. Never seen him.
Before we left U-Drive, we checked over the rental contract on the truck in question. The deposit check for the truck was signed by Mrs. Inez Curtis. The truck was checked out at 6 a.m. The rental contract, the actual release form showing to whom the vehicle had been rented, was signed by a Harry Wilson. Rasmussen's name did not appear on any of the usual rental forms. The manager of U-Drive was positive that he had not rented a truck to Rasmussen. We drove out to 1957 Harper Annex. This time we found Mrs. Inez Curtis at home.
I'm terribly sorry about Mr. Kwan. Does he have everything he needs in the hospital?
Yes, ma'am.
How long did you say this Harry Wilson had been working for you?
6 or 8 weeks. But I'm sure you're wrong about him.
We're not accusing him of anything, Miss Curtis. We just won't talk to him.
He certainly came to me well-recommended. He was a nice man.
When was the last time you saw him?
Day before yesterday. He asked for his check, said he was quitting. Told him I was sorry to see him go. I'm anxious to get that guest house finished.
How about Rasmussen, Miss Curtis? How long has he been with you?
Wilbur's been with me for about 7 months. Good worker, but he drinks too much. Feel sorry for him.
You've rented trucks from the new drive coming right along?
Oh, yes, from Mr. Crockett. We had to have a truck to haul our building supplies.
Deposit on this last rental, did you give that check to Wilson or to Rasmussen?
I sent both of them down to pick it up. Like I say, Wilby's been drinking rather heavily lately, and I think Harry's the better driver of the two.
Do you know which one of those men was driving the truck about 5:30 in the afternoon, day before yesterday?
How would I know that, Sergeant? All I know is that I sent both of them down. I told Harry to drive.
Yeah, I see. Miss Curtis, were either of those men present the day you sold the jade rings to Mr. Kwan?
No. They have nothing to do with my gymnast, whatever.
Did either of these men know about Mr. Kwan's purchase?
Well, that's possible. They knew he was here. I'm sure they saw him come in. It's entirely possible that they might have heard something.
When did Mr. Kwan leave your house?
About 5 o'clock.
What time did the two men go after the truck?
Oh, they picked that up early in the morning.
Mr. Crockett down at U-Drive says that only Harry Wilson checked out the truck. Says he's never seen Rasmussen before.
That's entirely possible. Like I say, they might well have made other arrangements.
Were there any other people present when Mr. Kwan bought that jade?
Yes, there were. Two other buyers. They were bidding for the thumb rings, too. Mr. Kwan had the high bid, so I sold them to him.
What if we could have their names?
Certainly, I'll write them down for you.
Miss Curtis, do you have any idea where we might locate Harry Wilson?
Well, he told me he was going to Mexico. Said he had friends down there.
Well, thank you, Miss Curtis. You've been very helpful.
Are you sure there isn't anything Mr. Kwan needs?
Yes, ma'am. Two jade rings. Mrs. Inez Curtis gave us a detailed description of Harry Wilson. She also gave us the names and addresses of the two other buyers who were present when Mr. George Kwan made his purchase. We checked them out and found them to be equally as reputable as Mrs. Curtis. They could tell nothing of the robbery. We went back to the office and got out an APB and a radiogram on Harry Wilson from the description given us by Mrs. Curtis. Stakeouts were maintained at Wilbur Rasmussen's apartment and at the home of Mrs. Inez Curtis. It was 4:30 p.m. when we got to the second floor of the Old City Jail building, the crime lab. Lee Jones had the evidence laid out for us.
Anything about the handkerchief, boys?
What's that?
The bloodstains. Old ones along with the new ones.
How does that figure?
We know how the new ones were made when the handkerchief was filled with buckshot and used on Quan. The old ones, hard to tell.
How old would you say they were?
The handkerchief has been through the laundry a few times. Stains didn't come out. Laundry marks right here.
I don't see them.
Man used Peerless laundry. Infrared marking system. Let me show you.
Infrared lamp, please?
Yeah. There's your marking. Can you trace it down?
Who's it belong to?
Man used the name of Harry Wilson.
There was nothing to do now but wait for some word on Harry Wilson. The stakeouts continued. We re-questioned Wilbur Rasmussen, and we talked again with Mrs. Curtis and George Kwan. It was Tuesday, December the 8th. We checked in for work at 8 a.m. Morning, Jess.
Hi, Joe. Where's Ben?
Communications. Getting the mail.
Any word on the new chief of detectives?
No, nothing.
What's your guess?
Oh, I think Thad Brown. A good man.
Maybe. Sloan's a good man, too.
Ben, you come in here?
Not yet. Why?
Maybe you'd like to take a little airplane trip.
What do you got?
Cheyenne, Wyoming. They picked up Harry Wilson.
2 days later, Thursday, December the 10th, Harry Wilson was returned to the Los Angeles County Jail and booked on suspicion of robbery. We checked with Lieutenant Frank Cunningham in the Record Bureau. From Wilson's fingerprints, he ran a make on him. Harry Wilson was an alias. We found out that he had lengthy records of arrests and jail terms for robbery, burglary, and grand larceny. Mr. Crockett at U Drive identified Wilson's picture. He was a two-time loser.
It's up to you, Wilson. It can go hard for you or easy.
I'm in a spot, huh?
You're in a spot. Lay it out for him, Jess.
It's all stacked against you, Wilson. We know you rented the truck. You knew Quan was at Mrs. Curtis' house. Your handkerchief was found at the scene of the crime.
You wouldn't believe me if I said I didn't do it?
With that kind of evidence, how can we?
I didn't. I don't know if I can prove it, but I didn't.
If you didn't, we'll help you prove it.
First, you gotta believe me.
All right, you got it figured. Now, what do you got to say?
Rasmussen did it. He knocked Quan over.
Where were you?
Buying my ticket for Cheyenne. I didn't want any part of it.
How do you account for that handkerchief?
It was mine, but Rasmussen had it. He cut his finger one day in the job. I loaned it to him.
Well, that checks. Old bloodstains, new ones.
All right, let's pick up Rasmussen.
Oh, you're at it. Pick up the Curtis stain. She planned it.
Wilbur Rasmussen was picked up and brought in. After intense cross-questioning, we confronted him with Harry Wilson's statement. In the face of this testimony, he broke completely. He gave us a full confession implicating Mrs. Inez Curtis. He admitted beating George Kwan and taking the jade thumb rings. He said he received $200 from Mrs. Curtis for the job. He requested that he be allowed to turn state's evidence. Mrs. Inez Curtis was brought to the interrogation room.
Gosh, you gentlemen have proof to substantiate all these accusations.
Yes, ma'am, we have.
It better be good. I have a fine lawyer.
We've got signed and recorded confessions of Wilson and Rasmussen, the two men who work for you.
Shall we play the recording for you?
That won't be necessary.
Miss Curtis, you got $8,000 for those rings. Wasn't that enough?
Not when I could make 16, no.
Where are the rings now?
I'm not going to get life for this, you know.
No.
Jade doesn't spoil. It'll still be good when I get out.
Yeah, but you'll be too old to appreciate it, Miss Curtis.
Okay, Penny. That was a funny one.
Sure was.
How about it? Did you figure it this way, Joe?
You don't expect me to answer that, do you?
The story you have just heard was true. Only the names were changed to protect the innocent.
On March 2nd, 1949, trial was held in Superior Court, Department 2, City and County of Los Angeles, State of California. In a moment, the results of that trial. Mrs. Inez Curtis was tried and convicted of robbery and conspiracy. She received the maximum sentence as prescribed by law. In consideration for turning state's evidence, Wilbur Rasmussen received a minimum term. You have just heard Dragnet, a new series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice for Dragnet comes from the Office of Acting Chief of Police, W.A. Wharton, Los Angeles Police Department.
Dragnet honors the city of Knoxville, state of Tennessee, and the men who make up the Knoxville Police Department, another of America's great law enforcement agencies. One of these men, Sergeant Joe H. Roberts, director of the Knoxville City Schools Safety Patrols, who dedicates his life to making yours more secure.
Fatima Cigarettes, the best of long cigarettes, has brought you Dragnet, portion transcribed from Los Angeles.
Be sure to listen to Dragnet next week. You're tuned for the cars on NBC.
All right, and we are back here on the old-time Dragnet show. Quite an interesting episode here. It was an interesting turn with the seller being the one who actually stole the jewels. And she did get a pretty tough sentence, which, you know, hopefully will make up for, you know, for her being able to get away with selling it twice. I had to, you know, I was listening in the chat room. One of the comments we got from Mama Mia, I was listening to this, was that, and I believe it was in regards to the interrogation of the kid, was so cool. And I thought, it's absolutely, you know, one of those things that was very, you know, was just amazing in terms of how it worked out, just worked great on radio, particularly in trying to get the actual truth from this kid. So very well played there. Earlier in the show, the one thing that might make some modern listeners wince was the joke about the Indian chief at the start of the show. You know, it's kind of racially stereotypical. One thing you've got to understand is a different time. And in fact, Joe Friday, Jack Webb, was actually one thing that he was very much into. His private life was very much consumed with jazz. That was very big for him. He actually had a show, Pete Kelly's Blues, and he was. And one of the articles I was reading about Webb indicated he was able to navigate around the world of jazz because of his general racially tolerant attitudes. So it was just kind of a different time. But I do see we've got a couple people in the chat room. Did anybody have any other comments or thoughts on this episode? All right. Well, I do thank everybody so much for listening, and I invite you to come and add this to your iTunes. You can do that at TalkShoe.com. Just put in the TalkCast ID 18797. There's a nice link to go ahead and add this to your iTunes. If you've got feedbacks, questions on the show, email me, adam@adamsweb.us, or visit the show's blog, www.orble, that's orble.com/dragnet-radio-show. But for now, I do thank everyone so much for listening. This is Adam Graham signing off.